Hey, good morning. Can folks hear me?
Yep.
I can. This.
All right. Well, we're going to get started. My name is Craig Tucker. I'm the Natural Resources Policy Advocate for the Karuk Tribe. I just wanted to check, can Will Houston hear me?
Yep, I'm here.
All right, great. I was checking out my new system here. So I just want to give you guys a brief overview of the issue and introduce a couple of speakers. As you all know, the Klamath River is suffering from what we think is the worst return of salmon in history this year. There's a lot of reasons for that, but predominantly we've suffered through several years of drought. We've got a complex of dams on the Klamath River. We have irrigation diversions in the main stem and in the tributaries. And all of these things together have conspired to create a real catastrophe for fisheries. The result of that is this catastrophe is not going to be limited to the Klamath, but it's going to be really statewide and West Coast-wide. And to talk a little bit more about that, I've invited two folks to join us today as speakers. The first will be Noah Oppenheim. Noah is the Executive Director of PCFFA in the Institute for Fisheries Resources. PCFFA is the leading trade organization for West Coast small boat salmon fishermen. He's a published marine biologist. He's worked as a commercial fisherman, as a federal fisheries observer, and an environmental staffer in the U.S. House of Representatives. After Noah, I'll introduce Amy Cordalis. Amy is the Yurok Tribe's general counsel. In addition, Amy is a tribal member, and she has fished for salmon her entire life at the mouth of the Klamath. After we give these folks a chance to share the perspectives of their communities, I'll open things up for questions. And the way it works is you can press 1 on your telephone, and I'll see your hand raised, and I can call on folks. We have a few more experts in the room. If we drift beyond Amy and Noah's expertise, we have fisheries biologists from the Yurok Tribe, Mike Belichick, and Dave Hillemeyer, and Dave actually sits on the PFMC on behalf of the tribe. So we have a really good group of folks, and so with that, I'll invite Noah to share the perspective of California's and Oregon's commercial salmon fishermen.
Hey, good morning, all. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Great. So thank you all for joining us. The reason that we're here is because California's commercial salmon fishermen and the communities in which they live are facing an unmitigated fisheries disaster. And California and Oregon's public trust resources are facing an unprecedented crisis. Right now, we're facing a set of commercial season alternatives that include, without question, closures in the Klamath Management Zone, which is a stretch of coastline approximately 200 miles in Northern California and Southern Oregon. We're also facing restricted seasons in South Central and Central California and potentially closures in areas around Fort Bragg. This will mean that the economic resources of California's coastal communities are going to be further diminished. This season follows a disastrous season last year, and California's commercial fishermen who participate in other fisheries like Dungeness crab have been facing fisheries disasters declared by the federal government, which have not yet been relieved by Congress. So how do we get here? We got here because California's water management system is broken. We also got here because we have dammed up the rivers, including those on the Klamath, the Eel, Sacramento, the San Joaquin, and because of the disastrous effects of climate change and a 5-year drought. The result is decreased salmon abundance and decreased ocean survival, as well as increased incidences of disease. This is going to result in decreased economic opportunity for commercial fishermen throughout the coast. And we respect the scientific judgment of the federal agencies that are going to determine this season. But we know that commercial fishermen, agencies, can't invent fish. However, we know that politicians and agencies are very good at inventing water. It's been estimated that there's 5 times more consumptive water rights claims in California than the annual surface water supply, resulting in a perpetual drought. We need to reevaluate this situation. In the meantime, commercial fishermen are going to stand tough. We know that this is a resilient bunch and we'll make it through. But this means that fishermen are going to be facing hardship unlike anything they've ever seen. What we need to the solution to this problem is to remove the Klamath dams now. We need to provide cold water for fish, and we need to fundamentally reevaluate the way that we treat water in the state. Thanks.
Thanks, Noah. I appreciate that. We'll let people ask Noah questions, but first we'll have Amy Cardalis. And for folks that's just joining us, Amy is the general counsel for the Yurok tribe. She's a Yurok tribal member, and she grew up and continues to fish when fish are available at the mouth of the Klamath River. Amy, can you share with us perspective from the Yurok tribe?
Thank you, Craig, and thank you to all for joining us today. This is something that is of the utmost importance to the Yurok tribe, and I appreciate you spending your time with us, and I'm hoping that we can share our message of speaking for the salmon through the work that we all do together as a result of this press conference. So as Craig mentioned, I am a tribal member. My family is from the mouth of the river, from the village of Rekwa, and for generations, my family, along with other Yurok families, have lived and fished and been on the Klamath River. And in fact, since time immemorial, we have practiced a fishing way of life. We were never relocated. We've always been on the Klamath River. And what that means for us is that we continue our fishing way of life. And so this year, with the fisheries failure, we know that our river is sick, and we know that if we don't take specific actions to heal the river, that things aren't going to restore on their own. The Yurok tribe is looking at a fisheries allocation of about 650 fish, which is the lowest allocation that we've ever received. Just for context, it's 650 fish is about 10% of the second lowest fish allocation that we've ever received, which was last year. Last year we got just under 6,000 fish, and that was the second lowest we've ever gotten. And now here we are for next year looking at 650 fish. And so the people in the community are devastated. People are coming to our offices, to the tribal government office in shock. There's a lot of tears. There's a lot of questions about how am I going to feed my family? How am I going to keep my lights on? People are in distress. And so what I want to focus my remarks on today are some of the cultural effects, to talk about that more, and then also the economic effects, and then talk about the tribe's vision for how we fix this. So as I mentioned, you know, we've been on the river for time immemorial. And so what that means for us even today is that most of what we do as tribal people revolves around fish in some way. So even when the fish aren't running, we are prepping our gear. We are talking about fishing. We are eating our canned salmon. As the season gets closer, we are buying new gear. We're making plans to make sure we can be on the river when the fish come home. And then when the fish arrive, we all gather down at the mouth of the Klamath River to be there together and to harvest. And that's a great time of community. It's a great time of being together and working together and having a very strong sense of pride that we as Yurok people are continuing our traditions that we have exercised since time immemorial. And then that when the fish leave, we are back home smoking and canning our fish and talking about the great times that we had. So I explain all of that to set up that this year, none of that is going to happen. So that great sense of community will be absent. That great sense of gathering around the fish, around the salmon run, will not be there. And for us, what that means is our very social fabric is falling apart. And we are a community, unfortunately, that already suffers from very high unemployment rates, very high poverty rates. About 80% of the reservation residents live below the poverty line. Lots of our reservation homes don't even have electricity yet. So we struggle with drug and alcohol problems. And when you take away the very core of our social fabric, which is salmon, those problems are just going to be exacerbated. And so this is, you know, it's a social justice issue for us, but it's also just a way, you know, survival issue. And we're literally talking about trying to preserve our historic way of life. And without the salmon, we can't do that. From an economic perspective, the tribe operates a commercial fishery, and our tribal government and our tribal citizenry is very committed to making sure that our tribal harvest is sustainable. We have a cultural, I always call it a cultural covenant, that requires us to never take more from the Klamath River than what is sustainable. And that's living by that cultural covenant has allowed us to continue our salmon way of life since time immemorial. But for us this year, because we won't have enough fish to sustainably harvest in a commercial fashion, we're not going to have a commercial fishery. So our commercial fisheries is canceled, and that means that we won't have that income that we rely upon every year, just like the offshore commercial fishermen, to support our families. And again, I mentioned some of the issues around poverty on the reservation, lack of economic opportunities. So when you take away the commercial fishery, that means our people are literally left with nothing. They're left with no other options. A good sort of analogy is, you know, closing the fishery for us is the same as closing, you know, some kind of plant in a one plant kind of town. So this is going to be really hard for us. It's going to have a lot of repercussions. The tribal government is working very diligently to try to figure out how to help our tribal members through this difficult time. One thing I also want to mention is in addition to the economic issues, we understand, as Noah said, why we're in this position. On the Klamath River, you have basically almost 200 years of development and consumptive uses of water. There are 6 dams on the Klamath River. There are dams on the Trinity River, which is a major tributary to the Klamath. The last dams on both of the rivers were built, you know, right in the 1960s, and those dams were built without fish ladders. And so now here we are, what is that, almost 50 years later, and our salmon are resilient, but there's only so much they can take. The dams cause poor water quality. They allow for toxic blue-green algae blooms, which kill our salmon. They create good river conditions. Well, I wouldn't say they create river conditions that allow for diseases, parasites to spread. And so they generally just create really bad water conditions. And so that's why, well, let me step back. We know that in 2014 and 2015, those river conditions led to the spread of a fish disease called C. shasta. And that killed about 80 to 90% of our baby salmon. So even though we didn't have a, you know, massive fish kill like we did in 2003 of adult Chinook and coho salmon. We still continue to have fish kills on the Klamath River. And we know that the kills that happened in 2014 and 2015, those are the runs that are starting to come back now, and that's why we're seeing such low numbers return. And so we're doing things about that. We're working with our neighbors. As Noah mentioned, there's an agreement to remove the four lower Klamath River dams. We stand next to PacifiCorp in its business decision to remove the dams from the Klamath River. We're confident that that's going to happen by 2020. And we know that through these kinds of agreements, working with our neighbors and our partners, that we will fix and we will heal the Klamath River. The Yurok people have always lived on the Klamath. We will always live on the Klamath River. We will always fight for our salmon. And in part because we know, because we've been there so long, we've seen things come and go, we've seen things change, and we know that this will pass as long as the people of the river decide that it's time to heal it and that it's time to change it. And so I totally agree with the comments that Noah made that what our river needs is an update to its operating system. We need to remove the dams. We need to evaluate how water releases are made, the water flow regimes. We need to do some water quality improvement work. We need to do some habitat restoration. And that's all work that we as a community from the lower basin to the upper basin can unite together and figure out how to update the operating system on the Klamath River to make our lifeways sustainable. Thank you.
Thanks, Amy. So we have a good group of folks on the phone, and I think all you have to do, if you'd like to ask a question of Noah or Amy or Dave Hillemeyer, if there's a technical question, is hit 1 on your dial pad to raise your hand. I can call on you. Will Houston from the Times Standard, do you have a question?
Yeah, I was going to ask, with this upcoming season, I know the tribe is expecting possibly get some disaster relief funds for the 2016 season. Does the tribes and also the fishing fleet as well plan to begin urging Governor Brown to declare a fishery disaster for this coming year? Is that pretty much in the works at this point?
Yes, we will be urging Governor Brown and Secretary Ross with Department of Commerce to declare a fisheries disaster for this year.
How about Dan Bacher from Fish Sniffer?
Yes. Amy, you gave some numbers of the Yurok Tribe harvest. Now, could you go over them? It was 650 that will be this year, and that averages out to about how many salmon per person, and also what is the usual commercial harvest on the river, like what was it last, or in years where it's good, and what is like a low commercial harvest comparatively?
Sure. So this year we've been allocated 650 fish. We have over 6,000 tribal members. So, you know, I think what we'll be doing is dividing salmon into 1/8 and handing out little salmon slabs to each tribal member. But the gist is obviously that's not enough salmon for each tribal member to even have one fish. And for a community that, you know, relies on salmon not only for, you know, our commercial harvest, but also for our subsistence harvest, this is going to be, you know, this is going to hit our bellies. It's really tough for us. Just to re-go over those numbers, last year we received, I think it was 5,800 salmon. And that wasn't even enough for one tribal member to have one fish. And that was our second. Go ahead.
Mention how many tribal members there are.
Oh, yes. 6,100 tribal members. Thanks, Craig. So last year, when we had about 5,800 fish, that was our second lowest allocation that we had ever had. And so now we're looking at, you know, just about 10% of that. And so this year at 650 is very, very low. From my perspective, the Yurok tribe has never had a fully functioning, very healthy salmon allocation because our fishery has always been compromised by the 200 years of development that happened, you know, that was beyond our control off of our reservation that harmed fish. So we have never had an opportunity to fulfill our legal right to commercially harvest salmon. With that said, in the past, a good year, we would have an allocation around 100,000 fish. And Mike and Dave, please step in if you'd like to add more to that. Yeah.
Go ahead, Dave. Well, I was just going to add that, for example, in 2012, we harvested 87,000 fish down in the estuary, total reservation harvest of about 95,000. And in 2013, we harvested close to 60,000 fish down in the estuary, most of which, or a large portion of which, were for commercial purposes.
The thing that, this is Craig, I would add is it sounds like a ton of fish, but we do know, the science tells us that because of the habitat that's currently available in the Klamath, that the optimal number of spawners in the Klamath system is about 30,000 fish in order to keep the run healthy and to ensure fishing opportunities into the future. And so normally, once they have a projection for returning fish, 30,000 are for spawning, and then above and beyond 30,000 are harvestable. So we're falling far short of what is considered to be simply the number of spawners we need to have in the system, and that leaves little to no room for fishing.
And Craig raises a really good point, and I'll defer to the biologist to some extent to make sure this is accurate, but the return run this year is so small and the numbers are so low that we are starting to get very concerned about a species collapse, in other words, meaning that if we don't have enough spawners, we're not going to be able to the fish won't be able to reproduce, and that's sort of a one-way direction towards extinction.
Will, did you have a follow-up question?
Yeah, it was regarding this year's run and the current river conditions. This might be more for Mike and Dave. What are the current conditions like on the river at this time? I know it's been a lot more of a lot rainier year this year, so is there some hope this year's return of spawning salmon will be able to flourish a bit more and make up for some of the losses of the previous years? Is there any concerning signs such as the pathogens and parasites that are showing up like in previous years?
Maybe Mike Belichick would like to answer that question.
Yeah, so I don't think you have to have a fisheries degree to know how much it's been raining this year. The trouble that the fish in are due to the out-migration conditions in 2014 and 2015. Those are the conditions that are creating the problem. And as you know, we were in the throes of a pretty severe drought back then. It's a little bit early right now to tell exactly what is going to happen with regard to the fish disease on the juveniles. We're hopeful because we had some very large winter flows, the science says that those should be helpful to the fish disease problem. So there is some hope for the future, but that doesn't help us right now with the terrible run that we're having. And I think it just can't be overemphasized just how much trouble we're in. When the spawning runs get this low, we start to get concerned about the numbers returning to specific tributaries of the Klamath, of which there are many, and would that be enough to preserve like genetic diversity and ensure the continued existence of the fish?
Anybody else have any questions? Hi, Molly Peterson. Molly Peterson from NPR and a few other outlets. Do you have a question for us?
I hope this is working. Can you hear me?
I'm doing a great.
I'm doing a recording thing, so that's why it's harder to tell. I can't help but notice that it was a year ago today that people were at RECWA, and there was a signed agreement about towards the cause of taking the dams out. And I'm wondering, I guess this is particularly for Amy, what kind of how you feel about, you know, this policy decision was made a year ago, everyone's been moving towards it. I'm wondering what's changed or whether you think that's imperiled in any way, because, you know, the call today, the policy call seems to be toward taking the dam out, and that's, yeah, on its way.
Great question. And so let me answer it in two parts. The call today is to, I think, the entire nation to join the Yurok tribe, join the people of the Klamath River in exercising our responsibility to take care of the natural resources that we all hold so dear and near to our hearts, salmon. I cannot imagine a Pacific Northwest without salmon. And as Noah was speaking to earlier, the Klamath Run affects the salmon runs all through Oregon and California. If the Klamath Runs go extinct, that is going to significantly affect the way that we as people from the Northwest live, because we won't have one of our most precious natural resources, salmon. And so I think the call is for everyone to pay attention to this, to know this is here, and then also work with us again on updating that operating system, right? So one component is the dams, and on that level, I am more hopeful than I have ever been that dams will be removed by 2020. One of the great things that agreement did, the amended Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement, was bring together the states of Oregon, California, the federal government, PacifiCorps, the tribes, environmentalists, to say, here's how we are going to facilitate dam removal. We are going to go through the FERC process. We are going to create a dam removal entity. We are going to fund it through PacifiCorps dollars and through support by the local communities. And that's the important work that is happening now. And as a Yurok person who cares so much about the river and what happens, I am so encouraged that we have all of these partners who are committed to dam removal, because the Yurok tribe can't fix this on our own, but we can fix it with the help of our neighbors, and that's what that agreement does. And again, we are on schedule to dam removal by 2020. The next component of what we need to do, though, is look at, okay, what is harming salmon? And what is causing salmon mortality on the Klamath River beyond the dams? The remaining factors are poor water quality and not enough water and habitat. So how can we all work together to, again, update that operating system? Because the Klamath River is heavily managed by the federal government. And so how can we as a community, as a coalition of people from the bottom to the top of the basin, update that system in a way that allows for more effective, more efficient management. And one of the sort of analogies that I've been playing around with is, you know, we all have cell phones, right? And we're all constantly updating and getting new software and whatnot. The Klamath River has a whole set of laws and policies and basically an operating system that sets out how it's managed. That system was set, you know, years ago, and we need to update that. We need to evaluate how do we use new technologies? How do we use data, science? How do we improve even the infrastructure around the river, beyond the dams, to help facilitate better water and river management? And another component of that, too, is comprehensive river management. So not just looking at the water flows, but looking at it as a whole ecosystem that has multi parts and components, and figuring out how those work together to improve river management.
Okay. Is there anyone else who has a question? Looking for hands here. Will Houston, you have a follow-up?
Yeah, I got another one here, just about the dam removal agreement. I know that part is moving along, but there's the other components of the agreement that were lost in Congress back in 2015, preparing the Klamath Basin essentially for these arriving fish. And I know there's been talks, efforts underway to restore this half of the agreement. Has there been any progress made on this effort so far? And is there any concerns that this process could be held up under the current federal administration and in Congress because it might require an act of Congress to actually pass this type of agreement?
If I may, this is Amy. I'll take a stab at answering that question. So we know that there are a lot of different lifeways on the Klamath River that rely on the mighty Klamath Basin and its resources for their livelihood. And the Yurok tribe is committed to working with all of the stakeholders on the Klamath River, all of the people who rely on the Klamath River for their livelihoods, to figure out a way to make our lifestyles sustainable. I keep coming back to this term sustainability, and I do believe that by working together, by using science, by using data, by updating the river's operating system, we can find a way to make our communities up and down the river sustainable, and that is my goal. Now, the Klamath River has a long history of division and fighting, and from my perspective, our strongest strategy is to look at each other as our own champions, as our own heroes, and that we are going to work together to, again, make our lifeways sustainable. We do keep in touch with our neighbors, and we are all talking about how things are going, and we're hopeful that as we move forward, that we can reach that level of sustainability through partnerships and collaboration.
Got I see David Ochoa from the Klamath Tribes here. David, do you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, I was. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, I was curious.
Will you introduce yourself for everybody on the phone?
Oh yes, I'm David Ochoa. I'm Klamath Tribes at large council member, and my question was, are you going to be looking for more water to be released from the lake or the projects later in this year? Are you going to be looking for more water to be released to help flush out the disease?
So this is Amy, and hello, council member. I'm very happy that you are on the line and with us today. And you know, for the other people on the line here, the Klamath Tribes play a very important role in the Klamath Basin, and they also stand to benefit greatly from removal of the dams because the salmon will return to their historic lands and territories. And I know the Yurok tribe looks forward to working with them and helping them to restore their salmon fishery. But clearly we have a lot of work ahead of us, council member. So to that end, I think what you're asking about is future water management and how to flush out C. shasta, which was the disease that killed the baby salmon in 2014 and 2015. So there's a lot of history behind this answer, but I'm going to try to succinct it in a good way. Leading experts on C. shasta disease, which include tribal biologists, federal biologists, academia, got together and prepared, well, they researched and then they prepared a document that outlined the specific kind of flows required to flush out C. shasta from the Klamath River. There was a lawsuit that happened over this winter, and one of the results of that lawsuit is that the judge ordered some of those flows to be released, actually in, what I think they ended up being released in March and April. And so water went down the river to flush out the disease issues over the past 2 months. We were really lucky because we had all of those massive rain events happening. And so what we did was, again, using science and being, you know, technologically savvy, we piggybacked some of those high flow events caused by the rain and added additional flows to meet the target flows to flush out the C. shasta disease. And by doing so, we lessened the amount of water that needed to be released from Iron Gate Dam and from the lake. So that's the kind of partnership that I'm talking about, is we have real opportunities here to sort of update our operating system and be efficient and protect all of the various interests in the Klamath Basin.
Amy, would it be fair to say that one of the outcomes of the litigation is that the agencies are going to have to tweak the flow plan until a new consultation happens vis-a-vis the Endangered Species Act to provide for, every year flows to meet these standards to flush out this disease parasite, but it's really unclear how those flows will be met. It's somewhere between managing the lake and managing irrigation diversions. And one of the principles of the legal case was that we couldn't do anything that would create additional jeopardy for suckers in the lake.
That's right, yeah. The court case was very clear that we can't harm the sucker fish or the coho fish, but in addition that the tribal water rights needed to be satisfied. And so the judge ordered a flow plan, which was negotiated by all of the parties to the lawsuit, but that included a lot of the folks in the basin. And that flow plan outlined how the disease flows would be implemented. And that flow plan will be in place until the federal agencies complete consultation on a new biop, which could be in the next, you know, couple years or so. And we're getting into a lot of weeds here,
I just wanted to make sure people can follow up
with me if they'd like more information, because that's getting into weeds that could be dangerous.
I just wanted to make sure that it was understood that we weren't going to negatively impact one endangered species, i.e. suckers,
right,
in order to accommodate salmon. That was not part of the deal.
Go ahead, Dave. That's what I recall. I just wanted to verify that. And I just wanted to hear, I was just curious if BOR had said anything to you about want more water from the projects or the lake this year.
Yeah, I think those are talks that are in process.
In process? Ongoing. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. If there's any more questions, we're going a little long, and I'd like to wrap it up. But I have, in the press release we circulated this morning, phone numbers for myself and Amy and Noah. I want to say, Noah, do you have any closing remarks? This is very tribal heavy, but we felt like it was imperative that folks understand that this is not just an issue for tribal folks on the river, and that commercial fishermen along the coast there's going to be people potentially losing their businesses, losing their boats. And so I just want to invite Noah to see if he has any closing remarks.
Sure. Thanks, Craig. I just want to harken back to one earlier question about the dam removal. It will not require an act of Congress. The normal FERC process is being adhered to and will require no congressional action in order to facilitate the removal of the Fort Klamath Dam. So thanks, Craig. You mentioned the interconnectedness of salmon throughout California. It is clear that the impacts of water policy and climate change and water mismanagement can be felt throughout the system. Commercial salmon fishermen in the Klamath Management Zone are going to hurt the most this year. There's no question, but the impacts will be felt hundreds of miles away. And without disaster relief, these communities are going to suffer incredible amounts of hardship. And we're encouraged by the bipartisan efforts in Congress to include disaster relief for the Dungeness crab fishery in the continuing resolution, which has a must-pass deadline of April 28th. And we are going to seek a disaster request letter to Secretary Ross from Governor Brown. And we're encouraged by what we've heard from Secretary Laird and Director Bonham to that effect. We'll be working with the agencies in order to get all the information and all the data necessary to submit that request letter. In the meantime, we have a saying, chasing disaster fish is worse than chasing radio fish. That means that you can't plan your season based on a disaster allocation or an appropriation. We're going to hunker down, and we're going to make this work. Salmon fishermen are a resilient bunch, and they have an incredible amount of community support throughout Northern and Central California. They're going to have to make ends meet one way or another. That means fishermen are going to be selling their boats. It means they're going to be defaulting on loans. It means that they're going to be seeking other forms of employment, which may make it harder to get back into the fishery. We need to solve this problem. We're optimistic, because of all the rain that we've been seeing, that future seasons will not be as deleterious as this year. But right now, people are feeling the hurt. We need solutions, and we need them now. We need to see change, and we need to see it immediately. And we hope that our friends in Congress, we hope that our friends in the governor's office are listening and taking heed to the fact that the people who depend on California's public trust resources are feeling the hurt. Thank you all for listening and taking the time today.
And just so you know, we think that the PFMC will issue their final recommendations to the secretary on Monday afternoon, although I think they're debating it right now as we speak in Sacramento. But all the options that are on the table are pretty grim in terms of fishing opportunities. And I've got one more person has a question, and we'll take that question and we'll wrap it up. Dan Bacher.
Yes, this is kind of like a two-part question, and it's more overall, big picture. Number one, what impact is the Trump administration's various appointees to environmental posts going to have on the outlook for removing the dams and restoring the Klamath? And number two, what impact would the Delta tunnels have on the Trinity and Klamath if for some reason both Trump and Jerry Brown were able to get the tunnels made into a reality and started construction on them?
Well, if my colleagues will let me, I'll take the first part of your question about Trump's appointees. I think one reason it's important to highlight this issue is we have to remember that the fundamental principles of this dam removal agreement were crafted under the Bush administration. And when the Obama team came along, they were very skeptical of the previous administration's policies. However, once they became educated on the Klamath situation, they basically maintained the Bush-era policy as it pertains to these dams. We're hoping that the Trump administration will behave similarly, where it's clear that this administration is skeptical of the Obama administration's environmental policies. But we hope once they take a look at the Klamath Dam issue, they'll sort of maintain those policies. I think the fact that dam removal is a proposal that's forwarded by the company that owns the dams, PacifiCorp, who's a subsidiary of Berkshire Energy. We know that dam removal, based on the Public Utility Commission findings, is in the best interest of ratepayers. And because the company is involved, we can only assume that it's their belief that this is in the best interest of their shareholders. So we think that in addition to dam removal being good for fish, good for tribes, good for commercial fishermen, good for water quality, it's also economically the right decision. And so traditionally, whenever a dam removal has been proposed to FERC with the support of the dam owner and stakeholders within the watershed, FERC has typically signed off on it. So that's what we hope is going to happen and why it's important for us to highlight these issues the way we're doing today. The second piece about the Delta tunnels, maybe I'll defer that to Noah.
Sure. The Delta tunnels represent one of the most disastrous policy ideas I've ever heard. 42-foot tunnels sucking a river's worth of water out of the system to export to almond growers. This is an unsustainable plan with an ungodly amount of money being brought to bear in its favor. When you compare the amount of money being put at this versus what commercial salmon fishermen and tribes are able to bring forward, it's like bringing a knife to a gunfight. All we have on our side is the Endangered Species Act, the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, and every single other environmental law that, in its wisdom, Congress has passed. And yet, there's still talk of these tunnels being politically viable. It's insane to me and to commercial fishermen throughout the region. Now, what these tunnels will do is, and it's very clear, the science is blunt and undeniable that the Delta tunnels operated under any scenario would result in declines in endangered ESA-listed winter run Chinook salmon. That is illegal under the Endangered Species Act. It will require one of two things, either an end run around the Endangered Species Act or the finding of some other relief valve. In the Sacramento River, that's the Trinity River. And that means that we are sacrificing Klamath River fish, literally throwing the virgins into the volcano in order to satisfy the overconsumptive water needs of a bunch of almond growers in the Central Valley. This is an unacceptable outcome. We'll be fighting tooth and nail against it.
Well, there's no equivocation there, right? I don't see any more hands raised, and so I'm gonna bring this to a close. I really appreciate everyone participating. It's my first foray hosting a press teleconference. I think it seems to have worked pretty well. You guys know it's hard to get to the Klamath. It's we're it's really remote, and so being able to do it on the telephone like this, I think is very helpful. So I really appreciate it. And if anybody has follow-up questions, call myself, call Amy, call Noah, and we'll be more than happy to talk to you. Thanks, everybody.